Summon passion.
I can give you the address afterwards. Okay, so let's get started. We're holding up the Mishnah at the bottom of Lamed Gimel on the base. Mishnah says, Arava Gzula, a stolen Arava, Vivesho, a dry Arava Gzula, same as we've had in previous Mishnayos. And Rashi points out over here that actually, I mean, when you think of it, you know, the Mishnah could have kept things simple. The Mishnah could have said by all four minim, if any of them are stolen or dry or from an asher or from an idachas, etc., then they're possible. Why does it have a set? Why does it repeat these things for each one of the minim? And in fact, for example, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Lulav, which was three prakim of Rambam the other day, then he does just that. He summarizes these things. If any of the Dalad Minim are stolen or from an Asher or an Eon Edachos, etc., then they're no good. And then individually, there's the different ones for each, and then individually, there's the different psulim for each one. So Rashi says that's exactly it. Because each of the Dalad Minim has its own individual psulim, and other details. For example, in the case of the lulav, we have one detail about the leaves from one level reaching or not reaching the leaves from the next level, the tzinei harabazel. Or we have the case where the leaves are starting to separate from the shedra, but not completely separated yet. That's unique to a lulav. A hadas, you have the unique thing about about the berries on it that we talked about over the last couple of days. Each of the minim, you have something unique about it, so therefore, instead of, yes, the Mishnah could have put together all the psulim that are common to all four of them and then mentioned individually the individual psulim, but instead the Mishnah, since you had to have a separate Mishnah for each one anyway, since you had to have a separate listing for each one anyway to list the things that are specific to each min, so the Mishnah already just put all of them each time. And the portion, by the way, deal with the question, why does Rashi first come up with this question now when we're talking about the Arava and not by the previous minim? All about the answer is because the Arava is the last one of the ones that we learn from the Esrog. We said the Esrog is called Hadar, Priyat Hadar. All the other three that they have to be Hadar, we learn from the Esrog. So now that we've reached the Arava, which is the last in the series that we learn from that, then now we have to discuss why the Mishnah had to list each of these psulim of Hadar individually. Anyway. If the Arava is from an Ashera or from an Eir Nidachas, it's fossil, same reasons as before. Niktam Roisha, if the top of it was cut off, Nifritzu Alea, or if the leaves of it are broken off, which again, you have the same machlokas we're showing him as you had by the lulav and by the hadas. Does it mean that most of the leaves fell off, or does it mean that most of the leaves got split in two? In Shulchan Aruch, it brings both things. So if you have a lot of times you buy arabis where, you know, there's little chunks missing from the leaves. That in and of itself is not a problem. But if you have that on many of the leaves, then you may have an issue. Yeah. That's tzatzifa, and also a tzatzifa, psula. All of those are possible. What is a tzatzifa? So we'll learn in the Gemara that a tzatzifa is a type of plant. It's similar. It looks superficially similar to an araba, but the leaves are shaped differently, and the stem is a different color. The word tziftuf means to twitter, like talking or twittering, like metzaftin. I'll tell you when we learn about it in the Gemara what a number of achronim say about that. But the simple meaning is that the tzaftufa is the name of another kind of plant, which it actually belongs to the same family, to the same botanical family as arabis, but it's shaped differently. And therefore, you can't use it. It's not even, you know, again, with some of these psulim that we've been talking about, some of them are only osur, some of them outright, everybody agrees they're only osur on the first day. For example, the things that involve lachem. Some of them, that's why you can't use a bar with lulav and ester the first day, but you can use them the other day. Gzula also, we said there are possibilities where you can use it the other day. Some of them is a matter of hadar, where there are some chloikas, whether it applies only the first day or whether it applies all 7 days. And then you have things where the thing is possible because it's not even the same kind of min. One example of that, for example, we talked about yesterday, a hadas, or 2 days ago, a hadas shoite, a hadas where the leaves, instead of being in groups of three, or you have two and then one higher up than them. That's not considered even the same species as hadas. Botanically, it's the same species, but la locha is not considered the same species, and you can't use it instead. Or I think Mefarshim even talking about you can't even use it in addition. If you have three kosher hadassim, you can't add a bunch of hadassim shoytim as you normally would. You know, you normally add a lot of hadassim, but you have to make sure that they're all good hadassim, because otherwise it's considered like a different min.
It doesn't go by the rov, in other words.
No.
You have,
if you have rov within one hadass itself, but most of it is mishulash, and part of it is not, fine, then it can count. But we're talking about if you have separate ones, where some of them are mishulash and some of them are shoyta, then you can't have the shoyta ones in there, because that's considered like a different species. Thank you. Similarly here, with the tzatzifa, a tzatzifa is not the same species as arava, so therefore you can't use it any time during Sukkot. Continues the Mishnah, kmusha, if the arava is not completely dried out, it's just wilted, v'shenoshu mikzatalaya, or some of the leaves fell off it, v'shal ba'al, or if it came from a field that lives off rainwater. Normally, an arava, actually, all the dalad minim need a lot of water. That's actually one reason why it says in the Medrash, why we use that for these four plants on Sukkot, because they need a lot of water to grow, and Sukkot is when we're starting to daven for rain. But, and the Torah actually describes it as arvei nahal, the aravas that grow by the brook, by the stream. So you would think then that if they don't grow by a stream, they might be possible. No, the Mishnah is telling us, even if they grow b'shal ba'al in a field that lives off rainwater, then it's still ksheira. Because as the Gemara is going to say, arvei nahal describes where they usually grow, not where this particular one has to grow.
Descriptive of species.
Right. Mepharshim asked why the Mishnah all of a sudden mentions over here about ones that are wilted or some of the leaves fell off, and the same thing is true also of a lulav or of a hadas also. If it's not completely dry, it's just wilted, then it would be kosher. And one very simple answer that they give is because the arava is more likely to happen with the we all know, you know, every year our dalad minim, the arava is the first one to go always. Yeah.
Why are they lashon rabbi?
We'll learn about that in the next Mishnah. We learn in a Braisa. Arvei nochal, why are they called the willows of the aravas of the stream? Hagdelen al nachal, it means that they normally grow by a stream. But again, even if they don't grow by a stream, as the Mishnah said, they're still kosher. Dava acha, another explanation. Arvei nochal, they're called that sha'ala shalom moshoch kanachal, because the leaf of it is long and narrow like a stream. So therefore, that describes the type of leaf, as we're going to see soon. A tzatzifa has a different shaped leaf. And that's one, and it's no good. Tanya Yiduch, we learn in a different place. Arvei Nachal, when the Pasuk says, Arava is of the stream, Aimli Ela Arvei Nachal, so you would only know from that that Davka, if it grows by a stream, Shal Baal V'shal Harim Minayin, how do we know if it grows in a rain-watered field or on a mountain, how do we know that it's still kosher? Rashi, by the way, points out, I mean, the same thing you could say also if it grew in a field that's artificially watered, but practically speaking, people aren't going to grow aravas in that kind of field that needs artificial watering, because taka and arava does need a lot of water. And that would be a lot of watering you'd have to do. Yeah, but the point is, so in other words, it might be common for a person to grow aravas in a field which anyway gets substantial rainfall, but if it's a type of place where you don't get substantial rainfall and you have to artificially water it, nobody's going to bother growing aravas in such a place. But in principle, it would still work.
So
Anyway, shabal v'shal harim minayin, so how do we know that an arava is kosher even if it grows in a rain-watered field or a mountain? The pasuk says, arvei. That arvei, that's one thing. You're asking why it says arvei. One reason is because it's arvei, any kind of arava, which is of the type of arvei nachal, is kosher even if this particular one does not grow by a nachal. Abashol says, though, no. The word arvei actually comes to teach us something else. Arvei shtayim, the word arvei implies that you need two aravas. Now, we'll learn in the next Mishnah about that. That's one reason why we say we need two aravas in our lulav. But Abashol is taking that differently. He says it means two aravas in the sense that you have two different mitzvahs involving the arava. Achas l'lulav, v'achas l'mikdash. One is for the lulav, for the dalad minim, and the other one is in the bis mikdash that they used to, we'll learn in the next parak, how they used to take aravas and put them around the sides of the mizbeach every day. On Sukkot, every day of Sukkot. And then nowadays, as a zecher to that, we have the beating of the arava, the chavitas arava that we do on Hashanah Rabbah. So Abba Shaul was saying, the word arve comes to teach us those two mitzvahs. Who knew? So where did the Rabbanon get the fact that you need an arava for the Beis Mikdash? The answer is Hilchos Gemirah Lahu. They say, it's not hinted anywhere in the Pasuk. It's strictly a halacha Moshe Mitzinai. The Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechanan, because Rabbi Asi said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that he used some examples of things that are halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Eser Netiyos, the halacha about the ten about the 10 newly planted trees. This is, there's a long, the Rashi has a very long description of it over here. You can see the Rashi F and T is how long it goes. But to give it over briefly, we know the halacha is you're not allowed to work the land during Shemitah. Minat Torah also, when the Beis Hamikdash is standing, that you have to, it's not just during Shemitah itself, you have to actually stop work on the field a certain amount of time before Shemitah. 30 days before Shemitah. It's al derech the same way as you have to start Shabbos a little early and Yom Kippur, and Yom Tov a little early, the same way you have to start Shemitah a little early. Now, the Rabbanan added to that, on top of that, that any time that you're doing plowing or work in the field, which is not going to benefit this year's crops, because this year's crops are basically done already, it would usually be done at this time of year to benefit next year's crops. Then if next year is Shemitah, then already it's also Midrabanan. Those times are, if you're talking about, if it's
within the 30 days.
No, after, before the 30 days. We're talking before the 30 days. Namely, if it's a field of trees, normally every so often you plow the field, you plow in order that, you know, to break up the dirt, so the roots get more air, whatever it is. Midrabanan, you have to stop doing that from Shavuos and on. Because again, from Shavuos and on, normally you're not doing it in order to make the tree, you're doing it in order to prepare for next year. And here next year is Shemitah. If it's a grain field, Sdei Halavan, it's called in Halacha, then you have to stop from Pesach time on plowing. Yeah, even much earlier. Now, so there's a special Halacha Moshe Mitzinai that says as follows. If you have in a field which is the size of a base saw, which is 50 by 50 amos, 2,500 square amos, if you have scattered around in that field 10 newly planted trees, then we consider those trees, the newly planted trees need more plowing around them than old ones because they're just newly starting to grow. So in that case, we consider the whole base saw, the whole 50 by 50 amma square is needed for those trees in order to grow. Therefore, the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai tells us that you're allowed to continue plowing that field all the way until Shemitah. The purpose of it is to keep the trees growing nicely. Because otherwise, again, if they're old, mature trees, they don't need the plowing as much. They can live without the plowing for a while. Yeah, otherwise they're going to die, or not necessarily die, but whatever, you know, they won't grow as well, whatever it is exactly, but yeah.
Are you allowed to do that during Shemitah?
No, during Shemitah itself, you wouldn't. Well, during Shemitah itself, the rule during Shemitah itself is you're allowed to do certain malachas. There's certain malachas that are outright usur, and there's other ones which are mutter only if you need them to keep the tree or the plant or whatever it is alive, not to make it grow better or whatever. We'll learn, we'll get to it in a few months, Bez Hashem, towards the end of the summer when we learn the sect of Ma'ed Katan. The first sugya of Ma'ed Katan is a lot of it is about these dinim of Shemitah. So we'll get there, Bez Hashem. But anyway, for now, the important thing to know is that we have this halacha moshe mitzinai about these 10. Again, so if you have fewer than 10 in the field, then we say that no. Then we say the whole base saw is not needed for those trees to get nourishment from. Then you're back to the rule that you can plow around each tree, just the small amount of area around each tree, and the rest of the field is off limits for you for plowing from Shavuos time and on. But if you have the 10 trees there, then already on their behalf, you can plow the entire base saw all the way till Erev Rosh Hashanah. So all the way till right. So that's Esen Atiyah.
It starts for Ilanus, starts on Rosh Hashanah.
It starts for everything on Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Number two, Arava, the Arava that we just mentioned in the Beis Hamikdash. And number three, V'nisuch HaMayim, the pouring of the water on Sukkos. So all these things, Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Now, why are they all mentioned together? Rashi says, Pashat, somebody came to Beis Medrash one day and asked, where do we know these three things from? Esen, Atiyah, Arava, and Nisuch HaMayim. And they told them, they're all Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. So therefore, the Gemara put them all together because they were all asked together. There's a choice of us elsewhere, I think, actually, in Ma'ed Katan that says the reason is because the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai also wants to tell us that all these three things only apply when there's a Beis Hamikdash. Arava only applies when there's a Beis Hamikdash, obviously. So does Nisuch HaMayim. And therefore, so does Esen, Atiyah, because this whole concept of having to stop work before Shemitah only applies when the Beis Hamikdash is standing. Anyway, so therefore, so the Rabbanan say that
we keep Shemitah today.
Yeah, but there is actually a machlokas Rishonim whether Shemitah nowadays is Daraisa or Rabbanan. Many Rishonim and Achronim hold that nowadays it's only Rabbanan. That's actually one factor when 150 years ago, when the Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael of that time first came up with the Heter Mechira. The idea that they sell agricultural land of Eretz Yisrael to the Arabs for Shemitah, and therefore they're allowed to work it. One of the bases that they used, it was a huge machlokas at the time, and it's still a machlokas ad hayom hazeh, but one of the bases that they used for this is the opinion that Shemitah nowadays is only the Rabbanan anyway.
So, and therefore we cannot still plow around those trees.
No, so that's the thing, because only when the Beis HaMikdash is standing do we have this concept that you have to stop work on the land sometime before Shemitah. Nowadays, if there's no Beis HaMikdash, even if Shemitah is Daraisa, these dinim about having to stop a certain amount of time before Shemitah don't apply anymore.
So it's not that if 50% of the Jews are in Israel, that we would have a...
That's a different question, actually. When does Shemitah become Daraisa again? Shemitah becomes Daraisa, you need more, according to the opinions that the Rabbanan nowadays, you need more than that. More than 50% of the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. You need that they're all living in the respective territories for their Shvatim.
Oh, okay.
Almost nobody knows what Shevet they're from, so, yeah.
What?
Oh, you're okay? Okay. Right, I should have known from your last name, yeah.
Even
okay.
For you, you just have a chazaka, you're not winning.
Technically, that's true. Well, kohenim nowadays are kohen chazaka, not kohen yichud. Okay, that's another matter. We'll get to that another time, yeah. Anyway, so the Chachamim answer to Abishol, you're telling me you need the word Arve to learn that the Arava that we do the Arava in the Bismikdash? No, it's a Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, and by definition, a Halacha Moshe Mitzinai has no pasuk for it. Tosfos points out an interesting thing over here, that actually it should come out, the Halacha, that given that, now ultimately we say on the next Amud, what do we use the word Arve for, after all? Since the Chachamim are not using the word Arve to teach us that you need one for the Beis HaMikdash, they use it to teach us that you need two Aravas. We also wanted to say just now that Arve is teaching us you can use any kind of Arava. We also wanted to say that, just before, that you want to use the word Arve to teach us that you can use any kind of Arava, whether it grows by a stream or not. Tosfos argues you can't use the one word Arve for two different drashas. So, practically speaking, since we hold by the opinion that you have to use two aravas for your lulav, you should not be able to use an arava that didn't grow by a stream, because otherwise you're kind of contradicting yourself. However, all the other Rishonim argue with Tosfos on that, and they say it's not an issue, and in Halacha it's Paskin that indeed it's not an issue. We do take two aravas, but we can also use ones that grew by a stream, on a mountain or whatever, or not by a stream.
Two interpretations can be taken.
Well, that, but also because some Mepharshim argue it's not so much that we're using the word Arve, the plural of Arve, to teach us that any kind of Arava is good, but rather once the Torah says in general Arve Nachal, it means that's the name of the species, Arve Nachal, and therefore wherever that species grows, it's fine. The Rebbe once talked about the Sicha, the idea that when you think about it, so we see by the other minim, we're kind of particular that the description the Torah says has to be kept. Pri et hodr, it has to actually be. We said it has to be a pri, has to be large enough to be considered a pri. It has to be hodr. It has to be et hodr. We'll learn tomorrow how et hodr teaches us that it's an esrog. Same thing by a lulav, the various descriptions that we said that kapris tmara means. Same thing by an afet oves, an arava. All of a sudden, an arava, we seem to kind of be saying, okay, so the Torah says nachal, big deal. It doesn't have to be by a nachal. What's the difference? And then I've talked about it, that the idea is, since we know the famous thing that each of the Dalad Minim represents a different kind of Jew, the arava represents the person who doesn't really have Torah or mitzvahs, but he's a yid nonetheless, and we join him together with all the other ones. He's a yid, just because of his etzev, just because of his atzmus, just because of his essential being as a yid, and therefore where he actually is right now, whether he's in a nachal or not, is less important. Whereas the other ones, since they actually have their mila, whether it's Torah, mitzvahs, or both, or whatever, they have to have that mila in order, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. Arve nachal, we said arve nachal means hagdelos ala nachal. It means aravos, the kind that grow by a stream. Krat latzaftzafa hagdela bein aharim, which excludes the tzaftzafa which grows in the mountains. In other words, again, even if we say an arava itself for the mitzvah doesn't have to grow at a nachal per se, but at least it has to be the type of plant that usually grows by a nachal, as opposed to a tzaftzafa usually grows in the mountains, and therefore the pasuk is implying that it's possible. What a tzaftzafa is in modern terms, some people say that it's poplar, other people say that it's a different species of willow, but the kind it has more round leaves, whatever. A few different possibilities.
They have a
Steinsaltz has a picture in his Gemara of something that he thinks might be a sassafras. It looks kind of like an arava, but it has the leaves are rounder. In our Gemaras over here, here's a picture. Yeah. Or this.
This,
well, we'll talk about soon. There's three different simonim that you need. Yeah. Amrav Zera, Mikra, where are the pasuk that we see that there is this different, that a tassafah does not grow by a lot of water, instead that it grows in the mountains, like we just said. The pasuk says in Yechezkel, Koch amayim rabim, a sapling, a planting by many waters, tassafah sama, he made it a tassafah. Now, what is the pasuk is talking about like this? The context of the pasuk, Yechezkel is giving a mashal about the Jewish people, about the situation of the Jewish people in his times, where they went through one king after another. Nebuchadnezzar took away one king and then appointed another, etc. So the pasuk describing as we'll see in a minute, that Koch HaMayim Rabim, he was supposed to be, the Jewish people are supposed to be like a sapling by many waters, and instead, Tzatzafa Samay, instead, it became said they made themselves into a Tzatzafa. So we see that a Tzatzafa is not a plant that grows by a lot of water, instead it grows on the mountains.
So Lashon Koch means?
Koch means like a piece of a plant that's taken to plant someplace else. Yeah. Abai asks him, "Vidum Purushi Kamafarish, why? Who says that's what the pasuk means? Maybe the pasuk means to say, Koch HaMayim Rabim, a sapling that grows by many waters, Umay Niu, a tzaftafa, and what is that? A tzaftafa. So we see that tzaftafa also grows by a lot of waters. Imkain, Reb Zera answers, if that's the case, my summer, then what does it mean he made it into a tzaftafa, implying it wasn't originally one, but then it became? So obviously the implication is that a tzaftafa is not something that is not what it was originally intended to be. It was originally intended to be a koch ha-mayim rabim, a sapling that grows by many waters, and it became something else. Now what does the pasuk mean? Omer Rabbo, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Eibishter is saying, Ani amarti shiur Yisrael afanek a koch ha-mayim rabim. I wanted that the Jewish people should be in front of me, should be in my presence, like a sapling that's planted that grows with a lot of water, that grows very comfortably. Well, mind you, and what would that be? The Hashem wanted there should be like an arava. The hein samu atman katzafa shabaharim, but they made themselves into a tzaftafa that grows in the mountains.
An arava doesn't have Torah, doesn't have mitzvahs. Why should the Eibishter say he wanted the Jewish people to be without?
So one reason is based on this idea that we just said of the yid is a yid ba'atmus. So the Eibishter wanted that. But I'll tell you, there's a number of different mafarshim and different drashas that they say on this. One very simple one is exactly that an arava, leaving aside the moment about an arava not having a taste and a smell, neither does a tzaftafa, but the Eibishter wanted the Jewish people should grow luxuriously, like an arava that grows luxuriously with all the water that it has available to it, and instead the Yidden basically decided to take the hard way and then become like a tzaftafa that lives in the mountains and has a hard time growing and maturing because it doesn't get very much rain. But there are various different explanations. Ben Yehoyada says that given that an arava grows by a lot of water, then in that sense it is in a way a symbol of a Talmud Chacham who learns a lot of Torah. The Eibishter wanted that the Yidden should be that. They should have lots of Torah and have lots of mitzvahs. Instead, they decided, you know what? We don't need that. It's good enough. We'll rely on the Harim. We'll rely on the others who are compared to mountains. But that's not what the Eibishter wanted. The Eibishter wanted that people should live off their own avodah, not rely on Geshe. There's a vort the Chofetz Chaim said, not Chofetz Chaim, the Chassam Sofer says a vort on it that the Jewish people made themselves a tzaftafa. You were asking before what the word tzaftafa means. One meaning of it is it's related to the word siftu, which means like chattering. So like the people were not careful with what they're speaking. The Gemara is going to point out soon that an arava has a smooth edge, representing the idea of a person who's honest in their speech. And instead, the Jewish people made themselves into a tzaftafa, which, as we'll say soon, has a serrated edge. Like they made themselves into sharp tongues, into people who are always talking improperly against other people. Lashon hara, rechilos, etc. Yeah. There are others who, instead of the version that we had now, was that the Braisa had mentioned the difference between a Rava and a Tatzafa, and Rav Zera is the one who brought the Pasuk from Yechezkel. The second version is that the Braisa itself continues with the Pasuk. How do we see that a tzatzafa and an arava are two different things? Because the pasuk says a sapling by many waters, he made it a tzatzafa. And on that, according to this version, maskif lo Rav Zera. It's not according to the first version, Rav Zera is the one who brought this pasuk as a proof. According to the second version, he's actually asking, how do you know that's what the pasuk means? Redum of Kodesh Hakama Farish. Maybe the pasuk is just explaining. Kocha maim rabim, a sapling that grows by many waters, maim nihu, what is that tzatzafa? And again, the answer, instead of that, he brought another proof that he's asking. Maybe it's after, maybe the pasuk means, maybe the second half of the pasuk is explaining the first half. And again, the answer is, in Kane my summer, then what would he mean he made it into a tzatzafa? Obviously, again, it means it's a different thing than it was supposed to be. And again, I intended that the Jewish people should be before me like a sapling growing on a lot of waters, a mayniu arava. Namely, the Jewish people should be like an arava. And instead, they chose to make themselves like a tzatzafa that grows in the mountains. Same idea. In any case, the point is, either way, we see that a tzatzafa and an arava are two different things. The Ebrish had a certain plan for the Jewish people, and instead, they chose the difficult way. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, Ezo Arava Ve'ezo Tzatzifa. What is an Arava? What is a Tzatzifa? Arava is Kana Shala Adoim. The stem of it is red. We always, we look at our Aravas that we use for our Lulavim. The stem is reddish. Which, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't actually have to be reddish when you buy it or when you bind it with your Lulav. Even if it's still green, as long as it's going to turn red, then it's okay. Same idea as we talked about the other day about an Etrog being green, and then, yeah. The ala shalom moshuch, the leaf of it is long, upia chalak, and the edges of the leaf are smooth. A typical arava, as we know. What is tzatzafa? Kana shalom lavan, it has a white stem. The ala shalom agol, and the leaf of it is roundish. Upia dermel magol, and the edges of the leaf are like a sickle. In other words, they're serrated, they have bumps on it.
Pia means
the edges of the leaf. But we learn in a braisa, if the edge of the leaf is like a magol, like a sickle that they use for cutting wheat, then it's kosher. Dermel masa pasul, only if it's like a saw is it pasul. What's the difference? A magol that you use for cutting wheat, both a magol and a masa have teeth. The difference is the teeth of a magol all point in one direction. So therefore, if you run your fingernail along the edge of it, like a sheikh does with a scallop, if you run it in one direction, you won't feel, and there won't be anything for your fingernail to catch on to. If you do it in the other direction, if you do it the other direction, then you will, yeah. As opposed to, yeah. I'll tell you in a minute. There are actually different. You're looking over there. What you have in your Gemara over there is an illustration that some Mefarshim say that mago and master means the size of the bumps. That mago means small bumps, and dermal master means large ones. What I'm telling you is a little different, is what Rashi's saying. It's not a question of the size of them, it's a question of the shape of them. Doimel magol means that they're all shaped, that they all point in one direction, so therefore if you run your fingernail along it in one direction, it won't catch, only if you run it in the other will it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the bumps on it, the serrations on it, stick out. So either way, you run your fingernail along it, it'll get caught.
Like the roof of houses versus the roof of factories, they're all tilted.
So what are you telling me, that one of the simonim of a tzatzafa is that the edge of it is like a magol? The Braisa is saying that if you have something which is otherwise has the simonim of an arava, but it has an edge which is domel magol, then it's okay. Amar Abaya, Titanya, that Braisa is talking about the chilfa gila, a type of arava that, yes, has small serrations. We call it an arava with a zegelach. You know, sometimes you can find both types in the stores before Sukkot. You have the type that have an absolutely smooth edge, and then you have a type that has little serrations along the edges. That kind is also kosher, we're saying. So yes, when the Braisa is saying that the here, I'll show you in my Gemara. Thank you. this one. You can see the leaves are a little serrated, but not so much. So that kind is also okay. So that's what the second braisa is saying, that if it's zoma lamagol, then it's kosher because it's still an arava. When we said by the tzatzifa that it's possible, what we mean is basically if it does not have any of the other simonim of an arava, then yeah, any kind of serration is going to make it possible. That's the Parashim talk about, but that's why the Braisa had to go to the trouble of mentioning the three simonim of an Arava and the three simonim of a Tzatzifa, basically to tell us that you don't necessarily need all three. We're saying an Arava that has two of the three and it has small serrations is kosher. But at least, because even though in that sense it's not completely like a regular Arava, at least that it doesn't have the other simonim of a Tzatzifa. Amar Abaya, Shma Mina, incidentally, you can see from this, Hai Chil for Gila, Kasha Lai Shina, that you're allowed to use an Arava with Zegalach for your Dalad Minim. Ask Pshita. Of course, we just said it's a kind of Arava. The answer is, Mao de Tema, Hoyuba Isle Shem Levi, you might have thought, because it has a secondary name, Loinis Kasha, it should not be Kosher. We said yesterday a similar kind of thing about a Hadas. We talked about a Hadas Mitzrah, which either means that it grows by the edge of a field, or that it comes from Mitzrayim, or that it has very narrow leaves, whatever it is. It's not just called plain old Hadas, it has a secondary name to it. And we discussed whether it's Kosher or Apostle. Now, we discussed earlier in the Masechta that, for example, that when it came to an Ezov, we said the Ezov that you use for sprinkling paradrum of water, for putting the blood on the doorpost in Mitzrayim, had to have to be the kind that's called only Ezov, not the kind that has any secondary name. It can't be Ezov Yavon, it can't be Ezov Roimi, etc. So here we would think the same kind of thing. Maybe it has to be called plain Arava. It can't be called an Arava with Zegalach. Kamash Malam, this is why Abaya is telling us enough. The Eima Hochinami. The Chilfa Gila is okay. Yeah. The Eima Hochinami, maybe you should say Taka Azoi. Maybe indeed the Torah is picky that it has to have to be a plain Arava, not any kind with a secondary name. The answer is Abe Nacho, Amar Rachmanim Mikol Makom. Again, like we said before, the Torah says Abe Nacho, which implies anything that's in the species of Abe Nacho. So Tzatzifa is not in that species, so therefore there can be slight variations in it. Amar Rav Chista, Hani Tlas Mili Ishtani Shmayo Mikichorav Beis Mikdash. There were the following three things that switched around their names after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. Number one, Chalafta Arabta, because we're going to see, because Negea over here. Number one, Chalafta Arvasa, Arvasa Chalafta. Number one, that what used to be called Chalafta, which is the Aramaic word for the Tzatzifa that we've just been talking about, came to be called Arvasa, Arava. And vice versa, what used to be called Arava is now called Chalafta. So therefore, actually, that's one thing that's relevant is because we just said that Abaya said that a Chilfa Gila, which we said is an Arava, which we said is not an Arava with Zegalach, is kosher. What do you mean? How is it? It doesn't even have the same name. It's called Chilfa. Based on this, we understand before the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, it was called Arava Gila. So it was called an Arava, it just had a secondary name. Now, there's people call it Chilfa Gila, Chilfa Chalafta, it's the same basic word. Yeah. So therefore, we see that they switched around. My nafkamina lulav. What's the nafkamina? Is as far as lulav. The mafreshim say that it means like this. The Talmud Chachamim continued to call things by their original names. When the Talmud Chachamim talked about aravta, they meant an arava that we're familiar with. But the Amei Aret, when we say that this name switched around, we mean the Amei Aret. The regular people started calling them differently. So if a simple person comes to a rav, which minim do I need to buy for sukkos? Make sure you tell him you need a chalafta. Don't tell him you need an Arvasa, because then he'll be taking the wrong thing.
But what if he's a Talmud Chacham?
If he's a Talmud Chacham, then you...
But you don't know it.
Okay, well, you probably can tell by the way he's asking, yeah. Another pair of things that the names were switched around. Shipura Chatzotzeta, Chatzotzeta Shipura. What used to be called a shofar is now called a Chatzotzera, a trumpet, and vice versa. Shipura is a shofar. Chatzotzera is a trumpet. My nafkamina of a shofar shal Rosh Hashanah. What's the nafkamina is as far as shofar. Same idea. In other words, a person comes to a rav. What do I need to listen to on Rosh Hashanah? Make sure you tell him you need to listen to a chatzotzera. Don't tell him a shofar because then he'll end up listening to a trumpet.
If you use it today and say a chatzotzera.
So nowadays, obviously, the name has been switched back. Yeah.
But it's not saying that the chatzotzera were in there. So shofars, they were.
No, those were trumpets. Those were silver trumpets.
Yeah. I'm just making. simply didn't make sure I have it right in my mind.
Okay. Actually, you know, one interesting, it is interesting, actually, about this Arava and Halakta thing. You can actually find, if you look up in a dictionary, you can actually find that in Arabic and probably in some other related languages in that part of the world, the names still are switched around Adayem Azeh. What we call an Arava, they call something like Safsaf, related to Safsafa. What we call, what in modern Hebrew is called Safsafa, a poplar, they call Arab, or something like that, like Arava. So we can see how at one time it was switched, and apparently in those languages it stayed that way.
There's no one that talks this language anymore in the world, right?
What, Aramaic?
No, there's much of the Gemara language.
Yeah, well, not exactly Gemara Aramaic. There are groups of people. I mean, it's more and more becoming extinct, but there are small groups of people, including small groups of Jews in Kurdistan and other places that speak languages related to these. Yeah.
So if I talk Tagamonk, what's all over them saying?
Probably not. No more so than Lahavdil. If you were to talk to somebody, if I were to talk to you using English from Chaucer, let's say from 700 years ago, that you'd understand it.
Right.
You know.
I was in Williamsburg the other day, and I met a Jew from either Dagestan or Kurdistan, and he started speaking to me in Arabic.
Wow.
He says, "You know what, we still speak Aramaic."
Yeah.
And indeed, he started speaking. And
it's easier to learn also.
I'm sure it must be easier for there.
Amazing.
Yeah. Third one, Psota, what used to be called a Psota, which means a small table, is now called Psota, a large table. And Psota is now called Psota. My Nachkamina, what's the practical need for that? Lamekachamemka, as far as buying and selling. If somebody comes to you to buy a Psota, you have to make sure to give them a large table. You can't say, Psota means a small table. No, because the names have been switched around. What's the deeper meaning of this? There's a few different explanations. The Aruch HaNer says that these are all meant to illustrate what happened with the destruction of the Beis Mikdash, what's happened to our state, to our state as Jewish people. What used to be the Arava, we said before, the Avisha wanted us to be like an Arava, and instead we made ourselves like a Safsafa, therefore the names got switched around. The Eibishter wanted that we should be a shofar is supposed to be curved, representing, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah represents bittul, a chatzotzer is straight, representing a person who's straight and upright and unafraid. The Eibishter wanted we should be the chatzotzer and the goyim should be the shofar, and now it got switched around. And the Psota, a similar idea that it used to be that as we know in Chassidus that when there's Gili Alakus in the world, then we get the main Hashpa and the Goyim get it incidentally from us. And nowadays, it's the other way around. The Klippas get the main Hashpa and we kind of like get the outflow from them. So therefore, the Psota and the Psota have been switched around.
Actually, it's starting to change a lot more in the world. Israel's starting to get the...
I'm going to buy it. Asani Omer, I can tell you another thing where the names got switched around. Beikasi Huvlila, what used to be called Beikasi, which in Hebrew is called Beisakosis, is now called Huvlila. And what used to be called Huvlila is now Beikasi. These are two of the four stomachs of an animal. So here's a picture of the stomachs as a whole. Yeah, a cow or a sheep or any kosher animal has four stomachs. In a nutshell, the way it works is as follows. The reason why they have four stomachs is because these animals live off grass and whatnot. Grass is very hard to digest. We can't eat grass at all. We don't even have the enzymes and bacteria and whatnot to digest it. Cows and sheep and goats and whatever do, but it takes a long time. So what happens basically is like this. The cow or whatever eats grass. It goes into its first stomach. It ferments there a while. Eventually it becomes heavy enough from the fermentation, from the rotting, basically, to fall into the second stomach, which is called the beisakosis. Originally, at least, it was called the beisakosis. And it's called beisakosis because actually the kosis means cups. The inner lining of it actually looks like a pattern of cups, looks like a pattern of indentations. There's like two layers of skin there. There's a smooth layer on the outside, and then on the inside there's a layer that's kind of like broken up into a bunch of cells. The idea of that is in that stomach the grass or whatever gets further broken down, and eventually gets formed and gets formed into a cut. Then the animal is maligated. It brings back up that cut and rechews it.
How's it rechewed? it puts his mouth?
Yeah.
Bitter like vomit, I guess.
Apparently not. But no, because no, the reason why vomit tastes bitter is because it's got stomach juices in it. An animal's fourth stomach is where the real digestion, like all kind of digestion, takes place. These first three stomachs are kind of like
food. It's like just chewing it over and
yeah,
over and over.
Basically. So they bring up this thing from the base of colitis back to their mouth. That's malagueira. They re-chew it as many times. Eventually it gets broken down enough where it's able to go out of the base of colitis into the third stomach. In the third stomach, basically what happens is most of the water in it gets extracted because the animal needs that water. If it had to give up all that water, then it would have to drink a lot more or die of dehydration. And eventually, eventually it goes to the fourth stomach, and the fourth stomach is pretty much like our stomach. It gets mixed with digestive juices, and it gets digested and then sent off to the intestine.
They have all different swallowing systems. So we have to know which stomach to swallow
into. No. So they always—that's the thing. They always swallow into the first stomach. They always swallow into the first stomach, and then from there, when it's ready, when it's heavy enough, it falls down naturally into the second stomach. The second stomach is directly below it.
I feel like you
have to re-swallow it. No. So anything that stays in the second stomach and is not moving into the third stomach, it means it's not digested enough. It means it's not broken down enough, and then it needs to chew it, and then it needs to bring it back up and chew it some more. Yeah. Anyway. So the two middle stomachs then, in Hebrew they're called the besakosis is the second one, and the third one is called the hemsis. In Aramaic, they're called Bekasi and Hovlila. Now, the thing is like this. We know in general, if any...
Bekasi is the first one.
Bekasi is the second one. The first one is called Bekeres. We're not dealing with that right now. The fourth one is called Keva. We're not dealing with that one either. We're focusing on the second and third stomachs. The second and third stomachs... there's a general rule in halacha that almost any organ inside an animal, if it gets punctured with a hole that goes from the inside of that organ to the outside into the inner cavity of the animal, then the animal is treif. When it comes to the hemsis, so Rashi explains like this: the hemsis, the third stomach, has very thin walls. So if there's something, if you find, for example, a needle or some, you know, a nail or something that the animal swallowed, and you find it in the hemsis, there's no way that it didn't puncture through the entire wall of it. So therefore, necessarily, the animal is treif. You don't find the hole there right now because it might be that the hole healed. But in halacha, if an organ gets a hole and then afterwards the hole healed, that doesn't count. So even though you can't, it's still treif. About 15, 20 years ago, there was a huge thing involving the kashrus of milk that had to do with a lot of this. Because to make a long story short, they have to sometimes do to the cows, they have to sometimes do an operation on them to cut into their stomach to release gas. Otherwise they're gonna die of bloating. And the problem is that if you're making a hole in their stomach, it makes them treif. What do you do about their milk?
So,
no, the Gemara. I don't know if it's halacha mishmisina. The Gemara discusses in Cholin the various. How we know these various things. I mean, the general rule in treifus is anything which the chachamim determine that an animal is not going to live for 12 months with this condition, then it's treifus. And therefore it lists all these different things, and one of them is, if, for example, if any of the stomachs has a hole all the way through, if the windpipe, or the food pipe, or different, the heart, various different organs, if they have a hole all the way through the wall of that organ, then the animal is treifus. And even if the hole heals afterwards, we say it doesn't count. Krum shalom makamas maka is no good. So when it comes to the third stomach, the hemsis, which we're calling over here huvlila, again, since it has a thin wall, then if you find a needle or a nail or whatever in it, you have to assume the animal is treif. Mashenkin, if you find it in the beikasi, in the second stomach, not necessarily, because what if the nail is only going through the inner layer, that layer that's bunched up to form the cups? So not necessarily did it puncture through the outer layer. Maybe it just punctured, like, from one part within the inner layer itself. And by the way, they do find this happen a lot of times. I've read they call it hardware disease. A lot of times when you have cows and whatnot, you know, they eat really quickly. You know, they eat huge volumes of food. It can happen that there are nails or whatever by accident in it, and they swallow the nail along with their food, and it winds up in the vesicosis. So we're saying if you find the nail in the vesicosis, not necessarily does it make the animal treif. Whereas if you find it in the hemsis, in the third stomach, then outright the animal is treif. There's no question. There really can't be any question about it, because necessarily it will puncture it all the way through.
Even if you didn't find the hole in it.
Even if you didn't find the hole, because you have to assume that it's scabbed over, but you still,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Tosfos discusses a different possibility over here that you might, with the basakosis that the chiddush is that you say that it's not chafe, even though it's going through one entire layer of skin, that the chiddush is that it's not that we don't have to worry about the second layer, etc. Anyway, the relevance of it to our Gemara, we're saying that the names Beikasi and Huvlila were switched around. What used to be called the Beis HaKosis is now called Huvlila, and vice versa. So the names of the second and third stomachs have gotten switched around. L'may nafkamina, and what's the practical difference? Exactly that. L'machat ha-nimtza ba'ubi Beis HaKosis. In this case, if you find a needle in the thickness of the wall of the Beis HaKosis, so the halacha is it applies to the Beis HaKosis, the second stomach. You have to know that nowadays they call that stomach Huvlila, and therefore you know that the halacha applies to that one and not to what people nowadays call the Beis HaKosis, which is the third stomach. Again, in halacha terminology, the names have always been kept straight. So, in halacha terminology,
so
we know.
The halacha applies to the second.
To the second stomach, not to the third.
Even though anatomically none of them changed.
No, because, right, that's what we're saying. Because anatomically none of them changed. Only the names changed. So don't think, when you learn the halacha, machat ha-nimtza ba'ubi Beis HaKosis, oh, well, that applies to the third stomach, because that's what everybody calls nowadays Beis HaKosis. No, it applies to the second stomach. Amar Rava bar Yosef. Afani Omer, I can find another thing where the names have been switched around. Bavel Bursif, Bursif Bavel. Bavel is the famous Bavel. The Tosfos explains on Amud Beis that it means the country of Bavel. Bursif is an area near Bavel, which the Gemara actually mentions in Sanhedrin that is the place where the Tower of Bavel was built, where Migdal Bavel was built, and that the people of that place in the times of the Gemara were Amei Aretz. The Gemara explains that Bursif comes from two words, Bur Shafi. It means like an empty pit. It's like a place that's empty of Torah. So what used to be called Bavel is now called Bursif, and vice versa. L'may nafkamina, what's the practical difference for that? L'gitei noshim, as far as gittin. So what's the din as far as gittin? You would think to say the obvious thing is you have to write the name of the place properly in gittin. And Tosfos mentions that Rashi does say that in Shabbos, where we also have this Gemara, but Tosfos himself says, I don't like that. Bavel is the name of the country. You don't write the name of a country in a get. You write the name of the city. In practice, and there are some places nowadays where they do write the name of the state or the name of the country in Gittin, generally only when they need to distinguish it from a different one. But usually you just write the name of the city and the name of the river, by whatever. But therefore Rashi over here explains like this. We learn at the beginning of Gittin, the famous Mishnah, how maybe get Mimdina Sayyam, that a person brings a get from outside Eretz Yisrael to a basin in Eretz Yisrael, or even to a basin someplace else outside of Eretz Yisrael. He has to declare Bafane Nichtav, Bafane Nechtav, what was written and signed in front of me, because otherwise we don't know whether the people who put it together and signed it know what they're doing. So like this, you can give edus that the people who wrote and signed it know what they're doing. They know in Tiv Gittin the Kiddushin. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't need to do that because we assume that people in Eretz Yisrael know what they're doing. The Gemara establishes there in Gittin, on Daf Vav or Zayin, that the same din as Eretz Yisrael also applies in Bavel. Because in Bavel also, they had many great yeshivas and chachamim and so forth, so they also knew what they're doing, and therefore if you bring a get from Bavel, you don't have to say b'fanei nechtav, b'fanei nechtam. Now that only applies to Bavel. It doesn't apply to Bursif, because we just said in Bursif they're all Amei Aretz. So therefore, you have to know the names have been switched around. If you're bringing a get from what nowadays is called Bavel, you've got to say B'fanei Nechtam. You've got to be able to say B'fanei Nechtam, B'fanei Nechtam. Whereas if you're bringing it from what they now call Bursif, that's where all the Talmud Chachamim are, and you don't. Mishnah says, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shlosha Hadassim Ushtei Aravis, you need three Hadassim, you need two Aravis, Lulav Echad of Esrog Echad, you need one Lulav and one Esrog, which of course is what we do. And of the three hadassim, afilu shnayim ketumim ve'echad einei katum. Even if two of them are chopped off and one of them is not chopped off. Now, the simple meaning of chopped off, we would assume, is like we talked before, niksam rosha. It means that the top of it is missing. So we'll talk about there's a lot of different rishonim and achronim that discuss this question of is that in fact what it means. And then the real question is anyway, if Rabbi Shmuel is saying you need three hadassim, why all of a sudden is he saying two of them, the tops can be chopped off? And Tavfinim after the Shloshim to him. Rav Tavfin says even more. You can have all three of them are chopped off. So we'll see in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara why that is.
Has to be kosher.
Yeah. Rabbi Akiva says no. Kishem shalulav esrog ve'esrog. Just as you take one lulav and one esrog. Kach hadas echad ba'arava achas. So the same thing. Only one hadas and one arava.
We usually go with Rabbi Akiva when it's Rabbi Akiva and his friend.
Usually yes, but this is one of those cases when not. Every rule has exceptions, right?
And it's an exception.
I mean, we'll see in the Gemara, actually, that even Rabbi Shmuel himself, we're not so certain whether he requires to be after all, but yeah. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, how do we know you need, how do we know the numbers? Pre Eitz Hadar means Echad. It says a fruit from an Eitz Hadar, so that implies one and only one. Kapos Tamarim implies Echad. When it says branches of palm trees, that implies one, because we said the other day that Kapos is written without a Vav, so it's written as if you can read it Kapas, which means one branch, so therefore only one Lulav. Anaf Eitz Avos Shlosha, when it says a branch from a thick tree, it means three. Rashi says partial because of three words. No, but Rashi says partial because of three words. Anaf Eitz Avos.
So the other ones also
several words. That's Tosfos asks. Tosfos asks Anaf to pre-Eitz Hadar, then it's also three words. And the answer is because later on we're going to say, we'll learn tomorrow that we learn a different thing from Eitz and from Hadar. We learn from Eitz that it has to be a tree where the fruit tastes the same as the wood. And Hadar, we learn the various ways that Hadar means an asterisk. So therefore, we don't have those words available to Darshan, that those three of them. Ave Nochal Shtayim, and Ave Nochal means two, either because you have two words, or because Ave is plural. And Vafilu Shnayim Ketumim, you can even have two of the Hadassim can be Ketumim, can be cut off. Ve'echad She'enei Ketum, and one is not cut off. Reb Tarfon Eme Shloisha, Reb Tarfon also says that you need three Hadassim, but he says Vafilu Shloshtim Ketumim, even if all three of them are cut off. And Rabbi Akiva, Eme Keshem Shalulav Esrik Ve'echad Echad, just as you have one Lulav and one Esrik, Hadass Echad Ve'arava Achas, so also you have one Hadass and one Arava. Amalai Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Akiva, if you're telling me that you're comparing all four of the minyan together as far as the numbers, well then by that logic, Yachol Yehei Esrog Yimon, by Gud Achas, by that logic then you should say the Esrog should be bound all together with them. Amarta, so Rabbi Akiva answers him, why? You have to say like this, V'chinem Pri Eitz Hadar V'Kapos Tamarim? The pasuk doesn't put a vav when it comes to the lulav. It says Pri Eitz Hadar, and then without a vav, Kapos Tamarim, like it's the beginning of a new list. The rest of them are joined together with vav. Va'anach Eitz Hadar is Ve'arve Nochal. So therefore, that teaches us that you actually have to have them in two different groups, the Esrog, and then the other three. Which, in fact, is the halacha. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, it says that Shulchan Aruch actually brings two different opinions. One is that if you were to hold the esrog with all the other minim in the same hand, you wouldn't be yotze the mitzvah. The other day is you would be yotze the mitzvah that way. When are you not yotze? If you actually take the esrog and literally bind it together with the other ones. Lamaisa, of course, we don't do either. We take the esrog in one hand and lulav in the other. We said the other day you take the lulav in your right hand because it's got three minim in it, and you take the esrog in your left hand because it's only one min. But you do have to put them together. Yeah, you do have to touch them when you have to have them touched together at the when you're finishing the bracha and when you're doing the nanuim.
They have to touch. They also have to touch all the three others.
No, not necessarily. Just one of them, Pashto. How do we know that they're ma'ak of each other? Meaning that you don't if you're missing some of the minim, you're not yotze the mitzvah with the other ones. Tamad Lomer, Ulakachtem, therefore it says Ulakachtem, which like we said the other day, Yidarshin Shetei L'Kichotam, it has to be complete taking. So in Shulchan Aruch it says that if you're missing one of the minim, you take the other ones without a bracha as a zecher for the mitzvah. But we said the other day, we're not worried about that you're going to think that maybe in future years you're going to think you don't need one of them, because you know the Torah says four.
In other words, you can take one of Alkohol.
No, that's a different thing. That's actually, Tosfos discusses, it's actually Machlokas Rishonim. Are you yotze to the mitzvah by taking them one at a time, like taking the lulav and then the hadassim and then the aravas, or do you actually have to be holding them all together just so that you don't have to have them bound? The halacha is actually, according to the opinion of the halacha, that's the Baal Halacha's Gerlis, and the Rambam baskins it, and therefore in Shulchan Aruch, that you can take each of them even individually in your yotze.
At the same time, though.
No, even one after the other.
Within the same...
But the point is, you have to have all of them available. If you only have three of the minim available, you're missing a Aravos, let's say, and you pick up the Lulav, and you pick up the Hadassim, and you pick up the Esrog, you're not yotze, and even if later on you get aravos, you still have to start all over again, because at the time you didn't have aravos. But as long as you have all four of them in front of you, yes, you can pick them up one at a time and be yotze. Now, we said in the Mishnah, and we said in the Braisa, that Rabbi Shmuel is saying you need three hadassim, two of them can be katum. So the question is, Rabbi Shmuel, monafshach, according to Rabbi Shmuel, either way you look at it, each shleiman boy, if he says you need complete hadassim, liboy nami kulu, then you should say all three of them have to be complete. What does two of them can be katumim? Eloi by Shleiman, and if he holds that you don't need whole one, after Luchad Nami Eloi, then what do you even need one that's whole? Amar Bira'a, that was his name, Bira'a said, Amar Rabshami, Chazer by Rabbi Shmuel, you're right, Rabbi Shmuel changed his mind. Now, what do we mean by Katum over here? The simple meaning, the simple and obvious meaning of Katum is it means that the top of it is chopped off. The Rambam paskins that way, for example. And the Rambam goes further. The Rambam says it's not only the Hadas that would be kosher by, even the Arava would be kosher by, also Katrum. Only the Lulav and the Esrog can't be missing anything. The Ravid argues very strongly with that. In fact, this is one of the places that the Ravid uses an interesting expression in Hasagas and the Rambam. He says, Kvar hifia ruach ha-kodesh v'veis midoshenu zeh kam v'shanim. The ruach ha-kodesh appeared in our Beis Medrash many years ago and told us that this is not the way to learn it, the way the Rambam is learning. The word kotru means something else altogether. The Ravid was a mekubal. It was a Baal ruach ha-kodesh. He was in Provincia, in southern France.
When?
800 years ago.
After the Rambam.
No, in the same time as the Rambam. So the Ravid actually wrote a whole pirush on our perek where he deals with all the halachas of Lulav and Esrog, and he explains what does it mean katum. He says it means like this. According to Rabbi Shmuel, the actual mitzvah is. We usually think of hadassim or an individual branch taken off a hadass bush. He says, really, the proper thing is supposed to be a hadass should consist basically of the entire bush, a whole stalk, you know, from the roots all the way to the top, which has branches growing out of it. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying, fine, I'm willing to be makel that you have two of those, two of them can be cut through, two of them can be chopped off little branches like the kind that we take nowadays. One of them has to be ene cut through, one of them has to be completely, a complete little miniature tree like that. And Rabbi Kalfin says you don't need any of them, all three of them can be cut through. So nothing to do with the chop being chopped off or not. And then there are other Rishonim, I think the Ran says a little differently, that Kotru means, forget about a whole bush, but typically you have a lot of times that a Hadas will grow, and then from the main branch of the Hadas, you'll have little branches growing off. So Kotru means that those little branches are chopped off or not. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying that you should chop them off, or you can chop them off, and Rabbi Kalfin is also saying. The actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is brought according to the Rambam that kotru means that the tops can be chopped off of the hadas, and the reason for it is not about the side branches. In other words, the top of the actual branch itself can be chopped off. The reason why it's good is because a hadas, the top is covered with leaves anyway. Therefore, even if the top is chopped off, you're not going to notice it because it's covered with the leaves. And for that reason also, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch by the same logic. Suppose you have a hadas where most of the leaves are dry and only the leaves at the top are fresh. We talked about this yesterday, actually, in the Gemara. Then it should still be considered kosher. Same idea, because the fresh leaves are the main part of it. The top of it is the main part of it. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the halacha is actually like Rabbi Tarfon, that all three of them can be kosher. And Shmuel is going according to his own svara. Because we find that Shmuel said to people who were selling hadassim, ashvu v'zavinu, sell them at a fair price. Don't think just because people need them for sukkahs, you can jack up your prices. And if you don't, then I will make a public drasha, that halacha is like a tarifin, that people can take hadassim that are ketumim, and therefore, you're going to lose a lot of business. People will just figure they can take any hadassim that they have. Ashvu, be fair, v'zavinu, and sell. Sell at a fair price. In other words, Rashi says, michlu v'shava. Sell it at its actual fair market value. Don't add to it just because the demand is higher for whole hadassim. Otherwise, I'll say, you don't need whole hadassim, and then you'll lose business.
How do you make a lacha based on economic consideration?
That's the thing. That's what we're saying. My timer. Why are we saying, that's the thing. Why are we saying that he would darshan like a tyrant? Elaim mishum de mekel. You're telling me that he would say like a tyrant who is mekel? Well, if that's the case, l'dur shlu could have given to mekel say. Then why in that case wouldn't he threaten? Remember, first of all, he's only threatening. We don't know that he's actually going to carry this out. But we're assuming if he's making this threat, it must be based on, fine, one second. So that's the thing. If we're saying that basically what he's saying is an empty threat, well, then in that case, why go with Reb Tarfon? Say in that case, I'll darshan like Reb Akiva, Mekel Tvei, who's even more Mekel. Reb Akiva says you only need one hadas.
Why should it be an empty threat?
No, because that's what we're saying. If we were to assume that Shmuel does not really hold like either of these opinions, let's say he really holds like the Chachamim, that you need, let's say he really holds you need three, and you really need that, and you really need, for example, we have three different opinions here, right? We have Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel says you need three, and one of them has to be whole. Rabbi Tarfon says you need three, and none of them have to be whole. Rabbi Akiva says you only need to be one. If we're assuming that he's just making an empty threat to get them to lower their prices, then he has no reason to mention Reb Tarfon. He could say Rabbi Akiva, who's even more lenient. Instead of saying, I'm going to darshan like Reb Tarfon, everybody still needs to come to you for hadassim, but they don't need to be, and they need three apiece, but they don't need to be shleimim, threaten them, I'll tell people that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, where you only need one. And therefore, also, you'll lose business, so that'll be an incentive for them to lower their prices. So therefore, if he didn't do that, obviously that means that he really does hold like Reb Tarfon. So it's not an empty threat. He really is meaning to say like this. Normally, I would be machmir. Normally, I'd like for people to be machmir and take the best possible hadassim. But if you're going to jack up the prices, then I'm going to force the issue, and I'm going to tell them technically the halacha is like Reb Tarfon, and you don't need and you can have cut ones. You're not deciding the halacha. That's the thing. That's what we're saying. The first assumption was that we're saying he doesn't hold the halacha is like either Reb Tarfon or Reb Akiva, but he was threatening the merchants that if you don't, he's threatening them, but it's an empty threat. In other words, maybe he'll darish in it, but then he'll tell people afterwards, really, that's not the halacha. I'm just doing that in order to force the people to lower their prices. And there's also a Esfas Hashem involved, but whatever. But that's what we're saying. In the end, the Maskana is he actually does hold, that's what we're trying to say. He does really hold like Reb Tarfon. So till now, he didn't want to darish in that because, fine, why should people be Mako like Reb Tarfon when instead they can take proper hadassim? But if the merchants are not, if he's going to be forced to, then yeah. So therefore, that would show he really holds like Reb Tarfon. The answer is, the Gemara says, not necessarily. Tlosik tumi shchichi. It may be that it's easier to find three hadassim that are chopped off. Chad v'loi katum lo shchiach. Well, one that's not chopped off is harder to find. So maybe, in other words, maybe he really doesn't hold like Reb Tarfon. But maybe indeed, according to this way of looking at it, Reb Tarfon really is the most lenient one. And therefore, he's using that as a threat rather than Rabbi Akiva. Because even Rabbi Akiva is saying you need only one, but he says it has to be a complete one. And therefore, the merchants will still jack up the prices for the one. Whereas he can say, like a tarifan, that you don't need whole ones anyway, but you need three. And therefore, that then people have no incentive to go to the hadas dealers. They can just find hadassim wherever.
But if reversing being machmir, because it's three.
That's what we're saying, basically, that there's two different ways of looking at it, whether a tarifan or a bakiva is slightly more machmir. Stop here, I think. We'll leave the Mishnah for tomorrow, since we have the Gemara for it anyway.